Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Crossover NBA podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck, and it is an all-star weekend edition, Howard, of the podcast. You are still in Salt Lake City, dutifully performing your duties at All-Star Sunday. I bailed out on Sunday morning. I don't.
The veteran move.
It is. I didn't, you know, I had the appetite for Friday, went to a couple of NBA events there, went to the press conference, of course, for the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon movie, as I am required as a Bostonian to do. A couple of things on Saturday, and then Sunday morning, Howard, I was long gone.
You were so on brand with the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon press conference that I wasn't even aware was happening. Is that like, is it embedded? Like, is it like every Bostonian just knows there's a sixth sense and you're drawn to it and you like you have no choice? Every person with Boston ties just magically appears there.
Yeah, we just kind of gravitate towards each other like we gravitate towards Dunkin' Donuts. It's kind of that same magnetic pull that we feel.
Oh, you mean that highly overrated chain of coffee and donuts?
Oh, no. I'm not doing this with you right now. No. We are not criticizing Dunkin' Donuts in this podcast. There's no none of that. But yes, you were at the All-Star game on Sunday. A lot to talk about coming out of All-Star Weekend. I guess our first reaction should be, Howard, the game itself. I don't know if you have a take on the All-Star game. Jason Tatum goes for 55. That's an All-Star game record.
Yeah.
I mean, the over-under, I don't know what the over-under was thought of coming in. It probably topped it, you know, with, 300 and some odd, 25, 30 some odd points. Your thoughts on the game itself?
My thoughts on the All-Star game are exactly what they've been for I don't know how many years running. And I know there is a certain segment of fans, I think the younger fans, who think that some of us who have been around for a while are just doing the grumpy old man thing when it comes to the All-Star game. But folks, it's really not that interesting if nobody ever plays even a lick of defense. And I'm not saying like the All-Star game is supposed to be like Game 7 of the Finals. But go on YouTube, kids. Go on YouTube. Go check out like the 2001 All-Star game and with Iverson and Kobe and Jason Kidd and all these guys, or go back to one of the 90s. Like, they competed. They tried. And the thing is, as much as we love the spectacle of the NBA, lob dunks, deep threes, guys crossing each other over, all the fun stuff that makes the NBA such a beautiful, fun game and just aesthetically pleasing, right, and exciting, those thrilling moments, those moments are more thrilling if someone's trying to stop you from doing it. If everybody's just letting you just blow by them, it's really not that interesting or that impressive. We know these guys can do this stuff. You got a dunk contest Saturday night. You don't need a different version of it on Sunday night when everybody's just letting each other fly by them. So the Elam ending, which kind of souped up the game several years ago when they first adopted it, now does not seem to be creating as much of that that tension. Playing to a point total or whatever, trying to win a quarter for the charities, I loved that idea, but it seems to have lost some of its momentum. Like, there's no moment in the game that feels vital, and so you're just kind of waiting for it to go by. Like, if this is going to be what it is, and guys are never going to play any defense, fine. At least drop it down to like 10-minute quarters, 8-minute quarters. Have a running clock, for that matter. We don't need it to last this long. And, like, okay, cool, Jason Tatum got 55 points and it's an all-star game record, but I don't know that anything means anything in this game anymore. So, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. People are entertained. Apparently enough people watch for the NBA to still just let it be this way without really, truly trying to fix it. I feel like the grumpy old man even making these observations or critiques, but if enough people are still watching it, maybe that's an indication that everything's just fine. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing, because enough people are still watching it. Regardless of what you and I think of, sure, of this game, you're going to get 6 million, 7 million people watching the All-Star game, and that's a number to put into context that just dwarfs, you know, most numbers that the NBA does in the regular season. What are the Christmas Day games? What do they do, like 3 million-ish, you know, something in that neighborhood? I mean, the All-Star game is still a pretty big rating success. So the NBA, even though you're right, I mean, I kind of watched the first half and then it was more or less on in the background while I was doing something else. There's no impetus to change this at all. There's going to be some years that it goes down into the 5 million-ish viewership range. Some years it goes above 7 million. It just is what it is. The All-Star game is there's no saving it, but there's no killing it either, if that makes any sense. The day before, All-Star Saturday, I didn't go to that either because I just have no use for it. Like, it's fine. It is what it is. Like, you know, all the talk coming in was the dunk contest, right? Like, and this has been going on for like 5 or 6 or 10 years, maybe. You know, the dunk contest, is it relevant anymore? Should it be continued? How do you get star players to participate? Well, you had Mac McClung, a two-way player with Philadelphia, who, I mean, has he even played a game with Philadelphia? I don't think so. He just signed that deal with the 76ers. Mm-hmm. So he jumps into the All-Star or the slam dunk contest mix, does some spectacular things. Like, he was ridiculous in that. And he made it interesting for sure. But it still is kind of one of those, it's not appointment television. And I'm not sure it ever was, but we were at a point in the 80s and even the 90s where you had stars participating. Michael Jordan did the dunk contest. Dominique Wilkins did the dunk contest. I mean, we're a long way from that. You know, the last few years, you have had Mac McClung types, you know, that have been competing in the dunk contest. And that's not going to make it relevant. It's not going to draw in viewers. And again, I don't know if there's any salvaging that. This was a big talking point at the media availability, which I did go to. You know, this was a big talking point there because, you know, people were wondering, what's it going to take to get Zion Williamson to compete in the dunk contest? What about Ja Morant and the dunk contest? And I heard Zion say he'd consider it next year. I'll believe that when I see it. I don't think that the Pelicans would be all that keen on Zion exploding, you know, off the floor extra at an All-Star weekend, especially a guy that's been injured as much as he is. But I just think this is where we are, Howard. And again, it's still going to do like a pretty good rating. It's not going to do a monster rating, but it's still going to do a rating that's, you know, upwards of or equal to the best NBA game in the regular season. So it's not going anywhere. I would love to see the NBA get creative and try some new things. I've long been an advocate of a King of the Court competition to crown the best one-on-one player in the NBA. I've heard some people suggest horse would be a good alternative for All-Star Saturday. I'm open to that, but, you know, I don't think you're going to get stars participating in the dunk contest, and I don't get the sense the NBA is looking to change it anytime soon. What do you think?
There was a lot of buzz last night And listen, I was in the arena. I did attend all the events.
God bless you for going to All-Star Saturday night for the skill, well, not the skill, three-point competition. And
I've never watched the skills competition, by the way. Not in person, not on TV, not ever. I've never watched the skills competition at all. The three-point shootout is by far, like, that is the actual headliner of All-Star Saturday. I know it's supposed to be the dunk contest, but most years, the three-point shootout is the one that always lives up, right? Like, it's a foolproof contest. It's always fun. You've got a clock on it. There's suspense is built in. You've got the point total that you can see on the board. You know what they're shooting for. You got a lot of good three-point shooters. Like, that one's bulletproof. The dunk contest, I know that the buzz in the arena was, and on Twitter was, Mac McClung saved the dunk contest. Yes, on some level he did, because we'd just gone through another multi-year drought where it had been dull results, nothing that was all that interesting. You know, the competitors were like, they're good dunkers or in-game dunkers, but the dunks themselves weren't all that great. And Mac McClung was spectacular. But we need to pump the brakes on the save the dunk contest thing, because, one, he's a G League player. They had to recruit a G League player to make the dunk contest actually fun. Is it, you know, two-way guy, whatever. But, like, his NBA prospects are kind of iffy. So, like, well, if you could just start getting ringers in the dunk contest, okay, great. There's probably all kinds of guys who are not playing in the NBA who are great at dunk contests, but that's not the thing. We've gone from Michael Jordan and Dominique Wilkins and Kobe Bryant and all of these guys who are true superstars of the game competing in the dunk contest and winning it to a two-way player because you couldn't get enough legit NBA players. Like, that's where we are. All that said, thank you, Mac McClung. That was awesome. That was fun. You know it's a great performance when the players themselves are just absolutely losing their freaking minds on the court. And they were, and it was part of the fun. But, okay, Mac McClung maybe comes back next year to defend his title. Okay. But it's not the same as saving the contest, because every year the contest is back on trial until the next guy does something that makes us care. And it's been a lot of years now since the Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine one that went down as one of the greatest of all time. And that was a long, long drought. So thank you, Mac McClung. But like, it's not the same as saving the dunk contest, because we need it. We need more performances like that. And frankly, we need higher profile players, and they just don't want to do it.
Yeah, and I, look, this has been a oft talked about point, but I don't think there's a way to incentivize high profile players to do it. Like, I don't know if there's a amount of money significant enough to get someone like Zion or Ja Morant, who are not only max level players in the NBA but have max level shoe deals as well. Like, it sounds stupid to say, but like, $1 million is probably not going to incentivize them or any of the top tier guys to compete in the dunk contest. I don't think there's a number out there that is going to get them to do it. So yeah, I think we're going to be, I don't want to say stuck with, because I want to give Mac McClung credit for doing what he did, but this is the caliber of player that you're going to get competing with it. Like, if Mac McClung is not in the league next year, does he still get invited back to defend his title?
Right. Like, yeah, that's right. And he said he wants to come back, but yeah, what if he's not? What if he's not even in the G League? What if he's gotten a better offer to go play overseas or something?
Exactly.
So it's interesting. I'm looking at the list of winners, you know, all time, right? And last year was Obi Toppin, who's a backup. The year before, the winner was Anfernee Simons, who at that time was a backup. He's now a starter, and he's a good player, but Anfernee Simons, not an all-star, at least as of yet. Before that, Derek Jones Jr., all right, rotation guy. Hamidou Diallo. You got to go back to 2018 to Donovan Mitchell before you have, like, a true all-star.
Donovan Mitchell competing.
And then that was in L.A., and that one was good. I remember Donovan Mitchell. That was, like, a really good performance. The winner before him was Glenn Robinson III. The winner before him was Zach LaVine 2 years in a row, and Zach LaVine has been an all-star, right? So before Zach LaVine, John Wall in 2014, but then it's like Terrence Ross, Jeremy Evans. Then we get Blake Griffin, the Nate Robinson years, Dwight Howard. But you don't have, you know, year after year of true stars. And those are just the winners. Like, there may have been, I'm not looking at the full list of participants, so maybe there were some all-stars who just didn't win. But it's... these are not memorable names, and a lot of these were not memorable dunk performances for that matter.
All right, there were a couple of media availabilities on Sunday that I want to dive into a little bit. The first, of course, Adam Silver, NBA commissioner, who spoke over the weekend. And, I didn't get a lot, Howard, from Adam Silver's media availability. He didn't seem concerned by much. You know, he was asked about several hot button issues. He was asked about players making trade demands, and he said, look, I don't so much have a problem with trade requests. I have a problem with trade requests that are public. He was asked about, you know, things like James Dolan's facial recognition program, which is bizarre, and didn't really come down hard on that. It just seemed like Adam Silver was not going to take a strong position on many of the topics that some of the media, including yourself, brought up in that room. What was your read on Adam Silver's presser? Was there anything that he said that jumped out at you?
A lot of people came out of there that Saturday night, out of his press conference, the chatter amongst us in the assembled media was like, wow, that was not really one of Adam's more impressive press conferences. He just didn't have anything to say. Like, he talked a lot about these issues, but he really had no opinion on any of it. He had no position to take on any of it. And it's kind of, you know, innate with the position or endemic to the position that you know, it is a political position of sorts, a diplomatic position of sorts, and Adam is the ultimate diplomat. But he's also supposed to be the leader of this league, its primary spokesman, and to an extent, its vision person. And to waffle as much as he did about how to deal with player rest and how that affects fans, how that impacts fans who paid a lot of money to see the Stars and now the Stars aren't there, or they may have gone to the game. Maybe they just turned on an ESPN or TNT game and there's nobody playing that night that they wanted to watch. And then they were like, oh, this was supposed to be a marquee matchup, but there's no LeBron and there's no Jason Tatum or there's no Giannis. And Adam had no strong position on it. It was just kind of like, well, there's a lot of different factors here. And it was kind of the same thing with everything that was brought up. And even the strongest thing he said, the strongest quote-unquote position he took or opinion he had was to call trade requests corrosive. But that was even more, he was talking about the public trade requests, and those have long been banned. You've always been able to be, or you can be fined for making a public trade request. Let me just point this out real quick. I don't want to dwell on it too long, but it's a distinction without a difference, the public trade request versus the private trade request, because almost every private trade request is immediately then leaked by the agent or maybe by the GM, but it's leaked and it becomes public. Just because the name of the player, just because the player himself didn't say it publicly, doesn't mean it's not a public trade request. Just because the agent didn't put his name on it while leaking it to somebody doesn't mean it's not a public trade request. So Adam Silver is doing this distinction without a difference thing where he says, oh, I'm vehemently against public trade requests. I think they're corrosive. I don't want to see that. But it's okay for guys to request trades if they're not happy. And he didn't really say okay, but he expressed some discomfort. But the strongest position he took was don't make public trade requests. Well, okay, but that's irrelevant. The requests are coming whether they're made publicly or not, whether the player is saying it himself or not. And that's the only time he can be fined, is if the player or his agent at his request says it publicly. But nothing's public anymore. Everything's just leaked. So, but yeah, when it came to load management, Adam was just all over the place. Like, oh, well, there's these factors and those factors, and I don't know what the answer is, but we're studying it. Great. I don't think he expressed enough sympathy, frankly, for fans. And in fact, he kind of waved off the fans' concerns by noting how, hey, we're on a record pace for ticket sales and season ticket renewals. And that seems to be proof in his mind. And I guess it's fine. Like I can't argue the point. Like, if the money's still rolling in, I guess that's all the justification you need to say things are fine. But things are fine until they're not fine. And he said that load management is not any bigger of an issue among Stars this season than any other season. Well, okay, maybe not, but it certainly feels that way to people. And it's being discussed more, and the complaints are coming more often. So it is an issue. And maybe he just didn't want to tackle it publicly while he and the union leaders are in the midst of CBA negotiations that are including these issues. Maybe he just doesn't want to reveal too much about how far they're trying to take this. But it was really, I just felt like Adam didn't have anything meaningful to say on any issue Saturday night.
I think that was a big part of it, the fact that the NBA is neck deep in negotiation with the union. I think he didn't want to put himself in a specific corner, like being on one side of one issue or on another. That was one of my takeaways from seeing him kind of, you know, straddle the fence on a few different things. Because the fact is, the load management stuff is a problem. It's a bigger problem than it's ever been before. You know, guys are just, you know, teams have become more and more conservative with, you know, a lot of, with mostly with their star players. I mean, there are some teams that take it to a complete extreme, like the Clippers are a great example of that with kind of the way they treat Kawhi Leonard. But there are a lot of other teams out there that are very cautious towards that. I did find it interesting to hear, like, you know, guys like Anthony Edwards, who's, you know, been, you know, something of an Iron Man during his time in the NBA, brief time in the NBA, says something like, look, if you're 60-70%, you got to go out there and play. And of course, you had the Barclays and the Shaqs of the world, you know, come out and just trash the players of today and say, you know, you guys got to go out there and play. So I think that's something the NBA's got to address one way or the other, because even if you're not getting backlash from fans that you can see tangibly, you know, whether it's ratings, money, you know, ticket sales, I feel like that's coming at some point. If you keep alienating fans with stuff like this, you're going to get to a point where you piss them off.
Adam said something really interesting to me last summer. I called him to ask him about Bill Russell after Bill Russell had passed away. And Adam considered Bill Russell a close friend, a mentor, an advisor, somebody he really, you know, sought his counsel on a lot of issues. And one of the things that I remembered as I was thinking about this weekend was that Bill Russell would refer to the constituencies of the NBA as a three-legged stool. The owners are one leg of the stool, the players are one leg of the stool, and the fans are the third leg. And I'm quoting Adam now, talking about what Bill Russell told him, and he's saying that Russell would tell him, quote, how important it is that each one of those elements be cared for in order for the league to remain strong. And I was thinking about that this weekend when I started looking through Adam's quotes again about load management. And he says, this was his quote from his press conference Saturday night, the mindset of our teams and players these days is it's not just a player issue, is that they should be optimizing performance for the playoffs. The difficulty is fans of that team might want them to do that as well, basically he's saying. And I'm not like, yeah, okay, if you're a fan of the Warriors and they're load managing Steph Curry, like, okay, you might accept that, but if you're the team that they're playing against and it's on the road, well, the fan of the other team wants to see Steph. So Adam's trying to like say, oh, the fans want this, or they're okay with this in certain circumstances. He keeps trying to make it okay, and we know that most fans don't think this is okay because they want to see the best players play. The other thing I thought was an interesting quote was Adam says at one point, I understand it from a fan standpoint that if you are particularly buying tickets to a particular game and that player isn't playing, I don't have a good answer for that, other than this is a deep league with incredible competition. I thought that quote was so disingenuous and tone deaf. It's a deep league with incredible competition, he says. I'm sorry, I understand, like, there's a lot of talent in this league, Chris, but when Steph is out, when Giannis is out, when LeBron is out, when certain players are out, I don't care how much talent there is. There's no replacement for that guy, not on their own team or any other team. There are a certain number of players who are the elite among the elite. And if LeBron's out, but Anthony Davis is playing, no one's saying, oh, it's okay that LeBron's out, I get to watch Anthony Davis. No one says that. You wanted to see freaking LeBron because he's LeBron. I'm not putting this on him, by the way, but, you know, but it's all the stars. And it's not, again, Adam made this point, and it's an important point for everybody to understand. So much of this is the teams and not the players. So much of this is the medical staffs and the sports science people and the front office dictating this and the players wanting to play, but their teams telling them they can't. And I, you know, no one's ever explained the science well enough that all of us laymen, fans, and media can understand how this is justified. And even Adam, at times, seemed to justify it by saying that there's data there, and at times seemed to say there wasn't enough data. And like, I don't know where he was. But you cannot deny that this is bad for the fans, for your paying fans. And you can't just say, oh, we're really deep, we got a lot of talent. No, there are certain guys who are the ones who drive the league. And if those guys don't play, that game becomes a lot less interesting.
And no sport in the U.S., definitely, in no sport do stars drive ticket sales as much as the NBA. Like, you go to a Green Bay Packers game, you're not going to see Aaron Rodgers. You're going to see the Packers. Hockey, you go to a Bruins game, you're rooting for the laundry. Baseball, you're rooting for great pitchers, great hitters at times. But stars drive revenue in the NBA more than they do any other sport. And You know, fans are going to see LeBron James, Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're going to see these guys more than they're going to see the teams that they play for. So, I do think the depth of the league is that's not a factor when it comes to fan interest and you know fans showing up to a certain amount of games. It is a problem. It's load management stuff. And just one point on the trade stuff. I mean, look, I didn't expect Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving to say, like, yeah, we're bad for the game. Like, I expected them to defend their position. Like, Kyrie keeps taking these positions like that, you know, the media is dehumanizing the player. And that's like, he keeps going back to that well over and over again as sort of a defense mechanism and a way to play kind of like us against them. It's ridiculous. Look, players, look, I'm not defending owners or defending teams necessarily, but like you can't compare a owner's ability or a general manager's ability to trade a player whenever and wherever he wants to a player deciding he wants to be traded. It's not the same thing. Look, if Kyrie Irving or anybody else in this league wanted the ability to block trades, all you have to do is sit down and tell the head of the union and tell your union reps that when we negotiate this round of talks, make no trade clauses part of max contracts or something like that. Because it's negotiated in. Teams are allowed to trade guys whenever they want. Players are not allowed to say trade me or else I'm going to drop a bomb in your locker room that detonates the rest of your season, which kind of effectively is what Kyrie did. I mean, Kyrie told the Nets, trade me, and the Nets didn't have much of a choice than to acquiesce to his demand. So I think it is bad, for the game. Like, I do agree with Adam to an extent that, hey, if you go to your team privately and say, look, it's just not working out, you can get a lot from me. I can go somewhere else where I want to play, where I can probably get a bigger deal. Like, those conversations happen a lot more than people think. But when it goes public and becomes this big thing, that's terrible, for the game. Adam's position and players' position, it sounds like is all publicity is good publicity. I don't buy that when it comes to the NBA. I think it can be a bad look. It can be detrimental to the game if you have all this negativity surrounding a certain situation.
Adam's a lawyer, of course, as we know, but never forget that his roots with the NBA is that he came up on the NBA entertainment side largely. Yep. And I think that that's the way he looks at things. I really think that the idea that they wanted the NBA to become a 12-month league has pretty much come to fruition between summer league and free agency and all the off-season drama and intrigue. They love the trade rumors. They love everything that keeps driving engagement. They're the league that most embraced and leads everybody in social media engagement. They love that. And a lot of it is this stuff. It's rumors and it's actual transactions and non-actual. So I think there's a large part of him that thinks, even if he's saying the word corrosive with trade requests, if they're public, yeah, no, they kind of like all the drama. This is what they're encouraging. But the thing is with all this movement, movement in free agency is one thing, right? A guy signs a 3 or 4 year deal, a 5 year deal, and then he leaves as a free agent. As you know, maybe fans won't like it if you were a fan of the team that the guy was on. Maybe old timers won't like it because they liked when guys just stayed with their team for their entire careers, as like Reggie Miller did or Karl Malone and John Stockton did when Malone left at the very end. But Patrick Ewing until the very, very end. I mean, people like that idea, this quaint notion of loyalty. That's long gone, but it's not that. Free agency is free agency. That's fine. Forced trades are something different. Forced trades are destabilizing, and the league does not want to confront this. Adam Silver has, from the moment he took the job, styled himself as the player-friendly commissioner. So there's only so much pushing he's going to do with the union, or especially with his biggest stars, because he knows they run the league. And so he doesn't want to speak to strongly against the idea of trade demands, but trade demands are destabilizing. It's bad for the fans. And especially when it's coming in the middle of a season. I mean, as we discussed before, the Nets literally blew up. Kyrie blew up they blew up a plausible contender in the middle of the season. I don't think it's happened in the history of the NBA that a team that was on pace for 50-something wins.
Which, by the way, Howard, like, I was in Phoenix for the Kevin Durant press conference last week. I was not booed as loudly as Nick Friedell was, but I heard some hissing behind me when I was asking
Nick didn't deserve that. Nick didn't deserve
yeah. I'll tell you, the backstory on that is Nick and I were sitting next to each other, and the microphone was kind of aimed in our direction, and Nick kind of took it first. He's kind of looking at me like, are you going to go first? Am I going to go first? Because we both knew after, you know, a half dozen questions about how star-spangled awesome Phoenix is that, you know, the one of us had to ask, you know, about the end in Brooklyn, and Nick got pretty loudly booed on that first question, which was pretty simple. Could you sum up your time in Brooklyn? But I later got the chance to ask Durant about kind of his reaction to how it all went down. He said, I was disappointed in that moment because, you know, he knew what we saw, 18-2 prior to him going down with that injury. Some good momentum. Nick Claxton playing great. A lot of the role players sliding into those roles. You know, they had some potential there in Brooklyn. I don't know if they were the championship front runner, but they were certainly a contender before that all went down.
They were. I mean, I didn't believe in the Nets as a championship contender, but the broad outline was there. I couldn't deny that they had to be at least considered. I didn't think they were going to win it. Didn't think they were better than Boston or Milwaukee. But the fact is, they were on pace for 50-plus wins. They have the star power. They have great role players. They had shooting. They were a plausible contender, and they blew it up midseason. And again, I don't think it's happened in the history of the NBA, not to my knowledge, not to anybody else that I had checked with at the time that I was writing about this a week or so ago. And so you can't tell me that that's good for the league. Like Adam puts this Pollyannish spin on it, like, oh, well, the Phoenix Suns and the Dallas Mavericks got stronger. Oh, okay, great. That's great if you're fans of those teams. Although, good luck, Dallas, with Kyrie. But if you're a Nets fan, that was terrible. And if you're a fan of having a bunch of contenders, you know, right, one just pulled itself out of the race in the middle of the season. So instead of maybe a four-way race or five-way race in the East, now it's down to Milwaukee and Boston with Philly chasing and Cleveland kind of maybe on the outskirts of it. But the Nets were right in there. And teams wouldn't have wanted to deal with a healthy Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, but they've just vanished. The whole a contender just vanished in midseason. So I don't know that the NBA is in any position to fix this or whether they can. I don't think it's a great new normal. I think players should be allowed to move around, of course. I think that, you know, especially in free agency, they should. And occasionally, if things have gone really badly, ask out if you have to. But in the middle of a season, two stars back-to-back from the same team, again, I don't think there's any precedent for that either. And by the way, usually if you're asking out in this league, in the past, if a star was like, I can't be here anymore, you got to move me. One, it's in the offseason. And two, it's because the team had no hope. It's because it's like, I'm looking around and I've got no way to win, so get me out of here so I can go win somewhere else. It's not two guys who signed up specifically to play in that city for that team and had the right cast around them. I mean, could have been better. Ben Simmons could be better for sure. But they were a plausible contender. You can't say I needed out because we were terrible. And the money thing is just ludicrous. We don't even need to revisit that one. Like, you know, Kyrie, you know, was perfectly willing to be there up until the point that he thought he earned an extension and they wouldn't give it to him. Like, demanding a trade because you didn't get an extension, like, come on, that's ridiculous. Like, nobody else wants to give you that money either. Dallas is not rushing to give him an extension right now. He's solved nothing by going there. It's all ludicrous.
Yeah. The other media availability that of note was LeBron James, who I think just kind of parachuted in to Utah on Sunday and is parachuting out that night, did his media availability on his own on Sunday afternoon. And the usual stuff with LeBron, NBA team ownership, playing in his 19th All-Star game, stuff like that. But yeah, I did think it was interesting, Howard, that he put so much emphasis on the end result of this season. The Lakers have 20 some odd games left, and LeBron described them as, I believe, the most important of his career. He doesn't want to miss the playoffs again. So, you know, what was your kind of takeaway from that, from LeBron speaking to the media and him being so emphatic that he needs to make the playoffs this year.
He clearly seems emboldened by the trades they made. He also at one point was talking about how it's too bad that they had the All-Star break when they did in relation to when they finally got to full strength, right? Like, they make all those trades. They get D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt, all these guys. But he's hurt for the first couple of games that they've got the new cast. He finally plays with them. They have a phenomenal game, you know, to close out the break, or to close out the games before the break. And he felt like, man, I want to continue that momentum. So there's an excitement there and a confidence there. I think he's renewed a little bit by the trades, the acquisitions they made. He checked out of the All-Star game early because of an injury. It was hand, wrist.
Didn't seem that significant. It was hand, and
yeah.
He also then later shook hands with everybody on the podium on the dais.
Yeah, listen, I thought it actually was interesting that he played as much as he did before that, because
Looked like he was going for MVP early on, Howard. He looked like he was going for it all.
He had missed a bunch of games with the foot and had told, I think, Chris Haynes at one point a week or two ago that, yeah, this thing's going to be with me the rest of the season. So I thought, given the foot stuff, given what the Lakers, all the work they need to do just to make the playoffs, I thought LeBron might do the cameo thing, kind of like Giannis did. I thought LeBron might play 5-10 minutes, take it easy, and then pull himself for the rest of the game. So I was surprised he went as hard as and as long as he or as played as much as he did in the first place. The fact that he said these last 23 games are among the most important regular season games of his career is really interesting for a guy who's won 4 championships and 4 MVPs and done everything he's done and just got the all-time scoring record. He's putting a lot of emphasis on this. He wants to salvage this season. And like he said it, he said, I don't want to miss the playoffs. It's second year in a row. It's embarrassing for him, a player of his stature, and especially when he's playing at the level he's playing at. So, you know, I thought that was interesting. It's very rare for superstars in this league, as we know, with all the load management stuff and everything else. Like, it's rare for stars in this league to talk about the regular season in such emphatic terms. And it just tells you a lot about where the Lakers are and where they've been the last couple of years and the position it's put him in, that it's this important because he needs to make the playoffs and he needs to make a run. And I think they can, by the way.
I completely agree. And, you know, for the last couple of weeks, I've been more bullish than others on these Lakers moves. I think they finally got the right pieces around LeBron James. They got shooters, and that's exactly what LeBron needs to have around him. I you know, that Portland loss, I know LeBron didn't play, but that's one the Lakers might look back and wish they got back, because, you know, Portland's been struggling. They had a chance to win that game and they dropped it. They could have gone into the All-Star break with 3 straight wins, but either way, I think these next 4 games are massive. They come out of the All-Star break with a home game against Golden State. Then there's a 3-game road trip that includes Memphis and ends in Oklahoma City. Like, they got to go 3-1 over these next 4 to get some momentum as they try to climb the standings. I don't think it's impossible. You look at the teams above them, Portland, Utah. Like, these are teams that you can leapfrog in a week if you play your cards right. But it's important. And the other part of it, Howard, is that, I mean, LeBron sees what we see. Like, he sees the top of the Western Conference standings without the 2016 Golden State Warriors. He sees Denver, which is beatable. He sees Memphis, very good, but young and beatable. Right now, Sacramento is sitting in the number 3 seed, followed by, you know, the Mavericks are in play and the Clippers are out there. Like, this is not a gauntlet that LeBron would have to go through to get out of the Western Conference. So I'm sure that LeBron's looking at this field going, look, just if we could just get there, give me the 8th seed. I don't care. But none of these teams are going to beat me 4 out of 7. Not if AD is healthy, and not if these guys that are purported shooters can live up to those expectations. So, yeah, look, I look. It's the case, Howard, where if they play well enough over these next 23 games, they could win the whole thing. I think it's going to be tough because I think they're well behind Milwaukee and Boston. But at the very least, they can put themselves in a position to play one of those teams and be the very rare 8 seed to get to the NBA Finals.
It's incredible that we're saying this, but I agree with you. Like, they're 13th, right? They are 13th in the West at the All-Star break and 5 games below .500. And yet, it is not entirely crazy to think that they could make a deep run and even win it all. Like, it's not. I don't think they will. I wouldn't be about to predict it. I wouldn't put money on it, even if I were a betting person, which I am not. But they've got a functional supporting cast finally. and they've got LeBron and AD, and if those guys are healthy, like, I know there's all kinds of caveats, there's all kinds of ifs, all kinds of teams that got to leapfrog and all this other stuff, it's got to break right. But those things can break right. They could. It's not outside the realm of possibility whatsoever. And the teams that are above them, and there are many, they're beatable. They're not, these are not super teams. The Nuggets and Grizzlies and Kings and Clippers and Suns and Mavs, none of them are super teams. All due respect to the Suns, like, it's, I want to wait and see. Like, the Suns might become close to a super team, but even then, like, you know, we use that term. A super team is like Steph, Clay, Draymond, and Kevin Durant at full strength. It's LeBron, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade in their prime at full strength. It's, I don't know that it's a 34-year-old Kevin Durant with a 37-year-old Chris Paul with a very, very good Devin Booker, but who's not a superstar. He's a star. It's not multiple MVPs on one team. So it's a really, really good team the Suns have, but it's not a super team. I don't know that we have a super team in the NBA right now. And all these teams, you know, have their upside, right? If everything breaks right for the Clippers could go to the finals for sure. But if we're going to play the if everything breaks right game for any of these teams, we can play it for the Lakers. And yeah, they are the they would be the proverbial team that nobody up top wants to face if they're seventh or eighth after the play-in. I just it would be incredible. It would be one of the most incredible stories you and I have ever seen, Chris. And we've seen some things. But if the Lakers somehow go from 13th at the All-Star break to NBA Finals, we will be talking about this for a very long time.
And by the way, you know, if LeBron was looking for any more motivation going into a postseason, like, what have I not done? Oh, it's taking a team that was a bottom four seed to a championship. Like, he's had some, I think one of those Cleveland teams was like a 4 or 5 seed or something like that. One of those years, because in Cleveland they just didn't really give a damn about the regular season.
Right, that was the we're just gonna like downshift of the regular season and save ourselves.
I remember Kyrie came to Boston thinking like that was the mindset that some teams should have, but it's a totally different situation. If LeBron needed any more juice, let's add to the resume by saying I took a team that was under 500 and the 8 seed all the way to the finals, all the way potentially to a championship. Last thing for you, Howard. The buyout market is winding down right now. We've had more player movement than I thought we were going to have. And you know, some guys that might be needle movers. You have Kevin Love. He goes from Cleveland to Miami. Kevin hadn't played much in the last few weeks in Cleveland. Fell out of the rotation there. Justin Holiday, he goes from Houston to Dallas. Danny Green, he goes from Houston to Cleveland. Terrence Ross, Orlando to Phoenix. And Reggie Jackson, bought out in Charlotte. He is now a Denver Nugget. We're still waiting to see what happens with Patrick Beverley, but it's more likely than not he winds up on a contender over the next couple of weeks. Any of those moves that stand out to you? Any of those moves do you think can make a difference for a team during a playoff run?
Well, we've got Wall and Westbrook still out there too, right?
Yeah, well, Westbrook is being rumored, though, for like... Like, I don't know how to frame these teams, like, that we do not give a shit teams. Like, Chicago does not give a damn at this point. They're just throwing everything against the wall. Yeah. And Washington right now has nothing to lose. Like, they're trying to do anything they can to claw their way into the playoff picture. So I don't know that, you know, they're not going to teams that I think are in a position to make some noise in the playoffs anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, listen, I love Danny Green going back to Cleveland. You know, obviously, early part of his career spent there. And Danny's won championships with, you know, three different franchises. He's got a lot of miles on him. He's up there in years, and he's, you know, a year removed. Has it even been a year since the ACL?
A little under a year because it was
a little under.
Yeah, under a year. Yeah,
I think
pretty fast comeback for Danny Green there.
He was very confident. I mean, he was on this podcast several months ago with me saying like, I'm going to be back sooner than everybody thinks.
I'm a little worried, though. Like, I think he can get back to being a meaningful contributor on a playoff team. I'm a little skeptical he can do it this year.
He doesn't have to also play a major role, right? Like, they've, you know, granted, as much as we've all talked ad nauseum this whole season about the fact that Cleveland needs a 3-and-D wing, he doesn't have to play big minutes there. They've got, you know, multiple options at the position, so he can just be the steady guy off the bench who plays X number of minutes. But
I think he's there, Howard. I think he's there for the locker room, frankly. Like, they don't have a lot of guys with playoff experience. And I was talking to Donovan Mitchell about this last week. I mean, you know, we were talking about these guys not knowing what they're getting into. Guys like Evan Mobley and Darius Garland and key players not knowing what the playoffs are like. I think Danny Green's influence in the locker room is as valuable or more than what he can bring on the court.
I think so. The funny thing with the buyout market, right? So, you know, we have all gone through these, you know, just discussions over the years where it's like, oh, you know, these guys get cut loose. They went to these teams, whatever. Who's going to make the biggest impact? And more often than not, it's not as big of an impact as we think it will actually make. The thing that's hard to predict is, because it's usually guys who are not, they're not playing, they're certainly not playing at an all-star level anymore. How much are they contributing? What's interesting to me about a guy like Danny Green in Cleveland, or even Kevin Love going to Miami, is these are guys with championship experience, ton of finals experience with both of these guys. Really smart dudes, really good dudes, good character guys, good locker room guys. So there's all that other stuff that goes with it. But if Miami is in some tight game in the playoffs, and you know, we don't expect Miami to make the finals or win the East, but you know, the idea that Kevin Love might make a couple of really big shots at a critical moment in a tight series, totally plausible. Same thing with Danny Green. Even if he's, you know, not all the way back from his ACL, but he's good enough to get out there, play a little defense, hit some open threes. Like, these are guys who they're as steady as can be, and they are going, and they're good in the clutch, and they might just tip a series with a shot here or there. So it's not somebody who's going to have a high usage, take a ton of shots, or have the ball in their hands a lot. If there's a guy from the buyout market who makes an impact on the spring, it may just be like, oh, that one go-ahead three that was really critical in game five of a tie series or something, right? So that's the interesting part. And it doesn't mean that like Terrence Ross won't be really critical in Phoenix, especially with the Suns. You know, we all talked about they needed to replace some of the depth they lost in the wings that they lost in the trade for Durant. Terrence Ross is going to get some run. He could be really important there for all we know. Yeah, if Westbrook goes to, say, Chicago, we're not going to care, right? Westbrook ends up with the Clippers, you know, we'll care a little more because that's a relevant team. But I'm not sure he makes that much sense there.
No, I don't think he makes much sense there either. I don't get the sense that that's even in consideration right now for the Clippers. I do think that someone like Reggie Jackson could have an impact in Denver. You know, the Nuggets traded Bones Highland. That had become kind of an awkward situation for a number of different reasons in Denver. They have been worried about their second unit. Like, they love their starters. Their starters are great this year. That starting five has been great. But their bench has been anemic. Bottom five in the NBA in terms of rating. Reggie Jackson's not perfect, but I think, you know, him coming off the bench is valuable. Also getting Thomas Bryant to back up Nikola Jokic is valuable. That job was previously at times occupied by DeAndre Jordan. That's not good for anybody. So with Thomas Bryant and now Reggie Jackson as part of that second unit, at least gives them a couple of guys you can rely on for spot minutes in the postseason. And that can be the difference in wins and losses. Like, if you can just get Jamal Murray a couple of extra minutes of rest because Reggie Jackson, who has played in the playoffs before, can give you 15-ish minutes, consistent minutes off the bench, that's not nothing. I don't know what Kevin Love has left. He was great last year. He was, the runner-up for sixth man. But his shot's been off this year. He's had that hand injury. I don't know what he's going to be able to deliver for Miami. Everybody else, I mean, like, Terrence Ross, a good player. I don't know what kind of impact he's going to have at this point on Phoenix. Patrick Beverley can defend. I don't know where he's going to go. But Reggie Jackson, to me, was the guy that I saw right away. I'm like, all right, he's not going to start, but he can contribute to that second unit. And that's something that Denver badly needs.
Yeah, for sure. And Reggie Jackson, obviously, you know, not shy about shooting and scoring. He's, you know, he can be instant offense at times, good with the ball in his hands. Like, he's I think he's a good fit there. And so I agree. It's none of the, you know, no single one of these players, I think, is going to absolutely be the one to change the course of the postseason. But the potential for, again, a 10-minute stint here, a clutch shot there. We'll see. We'll see in the playoffs.
Let me ask you one last thing, Howard, because we kind of touched on this with Adam Silver being diplomatic at his press conference, you know, because of the ongoing CBA negotiations. The NBA is kind of, and the union, have kind of kicked the can down the road a little bit with some deadlines about you know, opting in, opting out of this current CBA. You had union officials speaking on Saturday. You had Adam Silver speaking over the weekend. Do you believe that there is a fight brewing over some of these issues that are out there? Or do you think that these two sides, which, you know, over the, during the Silver era have gotten along quite well, are going to be able to bridge the gap and continue the NBA without any kind of work stoppage?
There's not going to be a work stoppage. There just isn't.
I just had to ask it that way. I agree. I'm with you.
I think it was Barkley the other day who was saying like I don't know what.
Owners are going to come get these guys. Yeah, he was like, owners ain't going to stand for it anymore. Yeah, well, come on. Not when they're raking in money like this, they are.
People have occasionally over the last several months or last year tried to hype the idea of you know, sound these alarm bells. It's just not going to happen. It's a very, very simple calculus. They are making a ton of money right now. The last time we had a lockout, which you and I covered extensively for many months.
No mas.
We did that in 2011. Why was there a lockout in 2011? Because at that time, the players were making 57% of basketball-related income, BRI, and the owners in the league wanted to claw back a massive amount of that, and they did. But at that time, we also were coming out of a recession, a global recession. There were, you know, a bunch of teams that the NBA said were losing money. You can take them at their word or not, but that was the premise. They're making no such claims right now. No one's saying that the system is broken, or the players are making too big of a percentage, or we have franchises that are in danger of going under. We have had none of that, Chris. And because of that, because league revenues are up to like $10 billion and climbing, because there's a new national broadcast rights deal coming in the next couple of years that will dwarf the last one, and the last one was massive. Because of all that, they are not going to shut this thing down and risk losing anything or risk pissing off their corporate partners. They're just not. It's not going to happen. People, just don't even worry about it. If anybody's like even paying the slightest bit of attention to the CBA talks, great. I'm glad you're interested, but do not pay attention to any talk of a shutdown. It's just not going to happen. It's a silly talking point on some level. They're making too much money. They're too successful. Do they have massive disagreements on some issues? Yeah. Are there some points of contention, as there always are? Of course. Are those issues big enough to warrant either side shutting down or causing this to be shut down? No, not even close. And the fact that they have continued to extend these deadlines, these are somewhat artificial deadlines, right? They set an opt-out deadline, and then they keep pushing that back because talks are going well enough that they just want to keep talking. They have the option, these two parties, to do whatever they want. They can keep extending. They could extend the current CBA if they needed to for a month at a time, a year at a time, whatever they want to, while they keep working on the next CBA. And, you know, there are definitely some positions of disagreement, but they seem to be working very collegially. Look, to their credit, among the other things you can use as a barometer here, they made a really concerted effort this time to not leak what they're talking about and negotiate through the press. And they've both abided by that really well. Like, there's been a couple of details here or there that have leaked out about, oh, the league would like this, the union would like that. But by and large, they've not been negotiating through the media, either side. And that shows a level of respect and cooperation that, again, to me, bodes well for them getting to an agreement without any stoppage at all.
No, there was talk at the time of an upper limit on team salaries, right?
The USL, like, the upper spending limits.
Right, and there are some owners I know that are determined, or, you know, that want that pretty badly, but there's way more owners that are not going to go to the mat over that. And the union's already made it clear that's a non-starter. That's not a real thing. The only thing I found was interesting, hasn't it felt over the last few years that a elimination of the age minimum was an inevitability? I'm not so sure anymore. Like, I'm starting to think, I don't know that who wants it. Like, it doesn't sound like the union is going to start pushing like crazy for that, because it does cost, you know, veteran jobs. While, you know, the NBA continues to say it's something that's coming, but to use that phrase, kick the can down the road, they keep doing that too. So that we may be in kind of the one and done era for the foreseeable future.
It's possible. I mean, listen, it's been at least 7 or 8 years since both sides said when Michelle Roberts was executive director of the Players Association and Adam Silver had been, you know, in place for a while as commissioner, both sides said, yeah, we'd like to eliminate the age limit. Adam Silver said, you know what? It's time. It's time. They could have done it any day. They could have. They don't, because you don't have to wait for a new CBA to do that. You can amend the CBA at any time you want, as long as the two sides agree on the terms of that amendment. And there were even predictions and people reporting this will be done by this class. Teams are preparing for the double draft, the so-called double draft, because it'll be the first year that high schoolers are allowed in again. And it was supposed to have already happened, and it hasn't happened. And it hasn't happened because even though they both sides agree that the age limit has outlived its usefulness or its appropriateness, both sides think that the other one should make a concession, which is a very strange thing. That's what's happened, is when the league says, okay, you guys don't want it anymore, union, fine, let's take it out, but you got to give something back. And then the union has basically taken the same position. That's my understanding of why they've been at a stalemate for years on that piece of it. Whether or not they accomplish it in this new CBA, because that's the best time to do it, right? If you do it as part of a whole, now it's not like either side has to specifically give something for that. But if you're just creating a whole new CBA, even though it's based on the old one, there's a lot of stuff going back and forth. There's a lot of different elements that have been changed. And then it's not like, oh, we gave something up for it. You can put aside that particular framework. But that's what's happened, is both sides think the other one's supposed to give something up to eliminate the age limit, which is silly. Like, it's clearly more for the players' union and their constituents or future constituents than it is for the league. The league has no obvious incentive to eliminate the age limit. Doesn't do them any good at all. In fact, it would actually, to an extent, hurt the G League and the G League Ignite that they've created. So anyway, it's a strange stalemate.
And it hurts scouting, too, because I know executives like, you know, college basketball is not that long, and a lot of times guys don't play full seasons, but they like having an extra sample size of, you know, time that guys can watch guys so that they can watch them work and see what they can get out of it. But yeah, the union always wants to get guys the next contract, right? Like, they want a guy to be as young as possible in the first contract so they get to the bigger contract the second time. But yes, I'm telling you, just listening to some of these union reps, I don't get the sense they're dying to make a change at this point. So.
No, it was funny actually to hear CJ McCollum the other day. I was at their press conference as well, the union's press conference, and CJ McCollum, who's the union president, said, listen, I'm a 4-year college guy. I've got a different perspective on this. And that was interesting, because usually you haven't found much from whether it's players or player reps, the union executive directors, others working for the union. It's always been kind of this moral issue where it's an absolutist kind of thing. Like, no, everybody should be allowed to come in as soon as they graduate high school, because it's a right to work kind of issue. And there are more subtleties and nuances to this discussion than that. But the union side of it has rarely allowed for those nuances. It's been more of like a moral issue. And hearing CJ as the leader of the union right now say, hey, I'm a 4-year guy, I do have a different perspective on it, it's interesting. Because, and then it was interesting, by the way, too, and I think it was Tamika Tramaglio, the executive director who came on board about a year plus ago. I think it was Tamika who brought this up, that sure, we would like the 18-year-olds to be able to come in, but we also want to make sure that teams have good veteran leadership in the locker rooms, which to me indicated we don't want to see the old guys knocked out by the young guys, because that's what happens. Like, if you're one of the guys who's in his mid-30s, you should probably be, for self-interest, self-preservation, should be against the 18-year-olds coming in, because there's only so many roster spots, you're going to get knocked out. I think, without knowing for sure, and I haven't asked around, seems to me like what Tamika was alluding to was the idea that, sure, let's bring the 18-year-olds in. Rosters should now be 17 deep. That's my read of it.
Good luck. Good luck with that one.
Add more jobs so that you can ensure that more of the 30-something guys or the older guys can stay and won't be just bumped out by the 18-year-olds. That's what that said to me. I could be wrong. I'm interpreting.
I think you're right, but I don't think that's a fight they're going to win. I just don't see it. I don't think the NBA is going to be eager to add another roster spot. They're already expanded it with two ways and things like that for cheap labor there, but I don't think that's coming down the pike anytime soon. Howard, good stuff, man. Safe travels back to New York, and we will do it again next week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.